Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Office of the President of Malta entitled The Hidden Treasures of the Grand Master's Palace. This talk is delivered by Mr. Salvatore Musu.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Office of the President, I welcome you for the last lecture of the second cycle from Rediscovering the Grand Master's Palace. It's a pleasure for me tonight to introduce Commendatore Salvatore Musu and thank him personally and on behalf of the Office of the President for the two cycles of lectures that we have. I also have to thank Mr. Daniel Cilia, who have time and again aided us with his photography, and the photography you will be seeing tonight is all the good work of Mr. Cilia. Mr. Musu.
Thank you. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming. And just before starting, I feel that I have to deliver my heartfelt thanks to His Excellency the President of Malta, who not only sanctioned, but also patronized the second series of Rediscovering the Grand Master's Palace. Then, of course, almost equally, I have to thank Mr. Keith Muscat, who has left no stone unturned to see that everything went in tip-top fashion, as you have witnessed. I always found him to give me courage, because many times I was too nervous about these lectures, but he managed with his characteristic be quiet, call everything now and quite happily. And equally, I have to thank my friend here, Daniel Cilia. As you will see this evening, well, he absolutely made me make a somersault, because I prepared the lecture and now I just came with wonderful photos, and I have to see what I was going to say, what I have to invent, but not. But definitely what you will see this evening is something that in real life, believe me, you won't see them, with the beautiful way he tackled these photos. It's something super. In fact, he felt so excited that it was one of the three pleasures of life when he discovered this.
That's Venus.
I don't want to mention what are these triplets. And then Mr. Leo Mario Haber, who helped him quite a lot in these photos. Again, I repeat, I assure you, something really worth coming, although this evening for the first time it didn't happen to be a cold day. In any case, so it goes without saying that the first series, it was not without some apprehension that I ventured to carry on with these talks, as I was met with the remark that this rediscovery team seemed to have been exhausted. Not convinced entirely of such an understandable objection on being asked by this office to carry on. With these talks, I set myself to browse over uncharted waters, as the saying goes, that had and perhaps still have links with this palace. To my utter surprise, not only I found full cooperation from would-be lecturers, who speedily, and I dare say even happily, accepted my invitation to discuss over here the points and themes I suggested. Furthermore, I was also approached by would-be lecturers desirous to take part in the eventuality of another series, of course, God willing, for which I offer my grateful thanks. But above all, here and now, I cannot forego my profoundest thanks to the past lecturers who have regaled us with their discoveries, more often than not, in an exquisite fashion. The noble Marquis Nicola de Piro, who had set the ball rolling with his domestic arrangements at the Grand Master's Palace, my friend Brigadier Claude Gaffiero, with his reminiscences as an ADC, my ex-liceale schoolmate, Judge Giovanni Bonello, with deeds and misdeeds at the palace, stressing more on misdeeds. Mr. Sandro De Bono as curator of fine arts on the bygone views of the palace, Mr. Liam Gauci, curator of the Maritime Museum, who gallantly stepped in to replace the sad state of health of our dear friend Joseph Muscat with his De Lunette's Sea Battles of the Nights. The assistant curator of fine arts, Bernardine Cicluna, who delved even psychologically on the portraits, and my friend Conrad Teig, the architect, who quite appropriately closed the series with the architecture of the palace. Resting for some time, we took up the cudgel once more for the second present series, that once we had the pleasant discourse of Judge Giovanni Bonella to shake the palace with his events that shook the palace. More than a rediscovery, it was that lecture. Architect Edward Said's undergrounds of the palace was a complete discovery, and Dr. Alfred Bonnici's happenings at the Tapestry Chamber since 1921, which had that personal touch. Another discovery was the erudite talk of Professor Frank Ventura, and last but definitely not least, Dr. Teresa Vella of the International Institute of Baroque Studies, Malta University, with her Renaissance Palace in the making. And today, well, it's me. Of course, I am not of the caliber of such erudite lecturers that I have just mentioned, but I'll simply try to eke out what normally escapes the attention of each one of us when, as in life, many times we miss the wood for the tree. Well, here I stand this evening to bring to a close this second series with these hidden treasures of the palace. Perhaps it's a pity, and I am feeling a bit awkward at such a title, because I do hope that His Excellency, almost on the eve of his departure, won't remark to me, sorry, I have to be explicit in Maltese, quote, "If it's a certain decalit tesori mahbiya ta'un, proprio matasayir," meaning, is it fair that you are going to reveal the hidden treasures over here just now that I am leaving? And going straight to this evening's title, The Hidden Treasures, what I really have in mind, and to express a more apt title, what I intend to talk about and illustrate where possible, may be better timed as the half-hidden treasures of this palace. I label them hidden for the simple reason that either because some of them, at least, are not visitable by the public in general, or because they are in an awkward position and situation or corner, thus not easily discernible to the naked eye. Most of them stand very high up, close to the ceilings. Another point that I would like to stress upon refers to my real idea of treasures. So what I have in mind this evening is not what one might envisage, some hidden chest full of precious valuables, but real treasures of historic, artistic, and at times evocative worth as my main objective. One may also add another remark about these half-hidden artifacts, and this concerns us, the viewers, because many times such unseen aspects may also be the result of a willful negligence on our part to discard details that are of extreme importance from several points of view, which, as I said, they may even have a message, be it historical, artistic, or just informative. Now, that's my introduction. And now I am going to bow my head and obey the diktat of Daniel Ciria. Well, the introduction now, we are going. These are plans that he is showing us. You can see the plan of the palace. The part marked in red is this room that we are in just now. And then we go to another. And you see the palace.
This is on the screen.
Yes. You see the entrance to the palace, a beautiful photograph. How he managed to do it, I don't know. But that's the palace entrance in there. Now, he's at first you'll be surprised. What has Caravaggio to do with it? But his keen observing eye discovered, you see the Caravaggio, you see that famous, I call it, arch over there, typical Maltese molding, and then you see close by the entrance to the palace. Daniel is sure that Caravaggio wanted it's recorded also that this entrance to the palace, he reproduced it on this world famous painting. You can see the similitude that he managed to do over here. It's from the palace that he did. Yes, yes. Now we go. Now that the part that mentioned in red are the rooms we call the ambassador's room, the pages room, the committee room, and the chapel, which we'll talk about later on. Yes. I said it's the basement. Yes, next to that. Now we are going to see. This is a discovery. This is really something. Well, I might call it half-headed treasure because nobody. No, I did go there, to be honest, but I presume that very few, if anybody of you, have ever gone downstairs. You will see the great workmanship of the knights, or rather the Maltese builder. Eh? This is down below. Do you see the floor? It's quite close to the ceiling, because that was constructed by the British during last war to make it a bomb-proof situation, please. See, at the play of lights, you see it much more beautiful than it actually is. But you see, and what is interesting here, something for me, it's a mystery. You see the floor, these are all logs of wood. They used to think that it is a sort of defensive way against humidity, which is not the case. But in any case, they have remained there since. Well, about over 70 years, I think, by now. They are still there, these logs of wood that placed on the floor to diminish the humidity that arises from down below. You see the corridors with these with logs of wood that were stuck on the floor. You see the numbers of the rooms. These are the doors, of course, by time got absolutely out of service. And you see these stairs where you can through which they used to go down into these that were changed into sort of shelters. You see on the other side the well. Actually it became a sort of conference room during the war. And you see the ceiling, the way it's lighted. What is also interesting is the opening. Originally these were wells for the storage of water. But you can see the benches that were used during the war. Let's not forget that the shelters were the salvation of Malta because of chaos. Of course, 10,000 people died in Malta, but compared to the terrible bombings of especially German cities, 10,000 is not a big fatality number, but it was the shelters who saved us. These are the stores where they used to play the stores. And what is this? Yes, now we're going to say this is the window that and the corridor that the past corridor over here, which overhangs the garden over there. That window, you see it in the middle. It's interesting because Daniel discovered over here, there you see it, on an expo, sort of ex voto. It's a graffiti of a ship of the order. You can see the flag of the order of St. John. And I wonder if anybody has managed to see it. Joseph Muscat, the expert on graffiti, would be very happy to see this photo that is up here. Yeah. Now, this is the window of the famous well, famous celebrated well, which, according to the condition of the sale of land, they had the owners had to be given a glass of water every year from this well, offered to the owners of the land. You can see the light. That's not water. That's throwing out the light. It's, but Daniel managed to put in some light. And I tell, now, this is the famous, also another famous corridor over here, where we'll see, you see how beautiful it is. It is not the entrance to the ex-armory, to the parliament. Yes, parliament, it's a deeper down. Now, you will see the wonders of the ceiling here by Niccolò Nazone. This is something And the way Daniel managed to do it is really something super. They say, just look at the ceiling. It's incredible how this Nazzone managed to paint all these details. One really has to, even if we were to go quite close with a ladder, we won't be able to see it in such fineness and such a precise reproduction that we can see it here. Niccolò Nazzone was also an architect, and his fantasy seems to be endless whenever he made these sort of drawings. Let's not forget that Nazzone, of course, originally was from Siena. He was Italian, but he ended up by becoming a Portuguese, married a Portuguese woman, had five children. But in Portugal, he built wonderful architecture, and it seems that his ideas there got used, and he managed to come to fruition, even his wonderful ideas. Look at the beautiful bear. I don't even think that he did it all alone, this man. He must have had some helper, but the fantastic here, especially the corridor, quite just in front of us here, where his spatial adventures, one would call it. He not only wanted to expand the ceiling, but he seemed to puncture it, to create two wonderful cupolas over here along this corridor that's at your back. If you go out and see it, even in the brightest of lights, you won't see it as beautiful as it is in these pictures that Daniel has managed to illustrate here. And we go to another corridor now, that also, it's just on the other side, which we might call it the eastern corridor, rather. Look at the beautiful ceilings. These marvels, simply just, you remain astounded with the holes that he managed to punch into the ceiling. I see the coat of arms of Livellena on both sides. And let's not forget that this is simply flat roof. It's painted over to appear, to give light in a dark corridor. Look at the complicated architecture that he managed to construct, and the galleries and whatnot that ever came close. I can't imagine, because nobody knows until this day if he did receive help. But is it possible that one man did all these delicate and complicated drawings? He must have been a first-class draftsman as well. In fact, when he went to Portugal, he did drawings as well and paintings, but he also did quite a lot of architecture. The Portuguese are quite proud of him. In fact, his name was changed into Nicolau in Portuguese. Now, you see on your left, this, we call it bedroom, no? I think it's not winter. Bedroom. It's the winter.
The summer.
No, this is the winter bedroom.
The summer.
No, summer is this side.
Yes, that's the one.
There's so much to see here, so much to discover. There's so many hidden treasures. It's a time to get it on. But these are biblical scenes. What are, look at the sharpness, especially of the photography and of the painting. These are biblical. Please, can you return back to the other one? These are, as you know, the Knights of St. John were Hospitallers. And as Hospitallers, of course, they had to show their hospitality to anybody who went to sleep in these rooms. And this is a section of the Bible of Lot, where two strangers, two angels, came to warn him of the impending doom on Sodom and Gomorrah. You know the story. The people of Sodom wanted to have an affair, and that very sad story that he offered even his two daughters, in any case. But the important thing is the message of the Grand Master and of the painter is a sort of example of the old Old Testament of hospitality, because he was rewarded, Lot, because he showed great hospitality to these two strangers at the gates of Sodom over there. Eh? This is another one. This is quite different. It's also hospitality of Jeremiah, who was taken prisoner, and the general of King Nebuchadnezzar pardoned, not only pardoned him, but he gave him all he needed, and he ordered that this poor prophet be kept in custody and given all hospitality possible. So you see, there were these indirect messages to those who would come to enjoy or to rest in these rooms. Eh? Of course, you see also trompe l'oeil paintings, but of course they are a far cry from the wonderful work of Niccolò Nasoni. Eh? Actually, he's more of a painter. This is another biblical scene here. Always the aim was to try to with the Perelios, the arm of Perelios, which are three pairs. Perelios in Portuguese mean pair, eh? So it's Perelios. And one knows the story of the, well, comic story of the, when a treasure was found, when they just pulled down, wanted to open a square in front of Dina Cathedral, and they found a treasure full of coins. And the Grand Master pretended that it should be him, because unbelievably, amid all the coins that they found, there were three gold pairs, and he said, "This is a message from God that the treasure is mine." And then the Pope had to come into the story, and he divided this in between the Inquisitor, between the Church, and I don't know if Perelios got something. They didn't even give him the pears. So this is the roof of, again, this corridor over here, that in front of it there is the chapel. This is not of the chapel. This is a bedroom as well. You look at the ceiling, you see the Madonna. It's a beautiful
room. Okay. When you're lying on the bed, this is what you can see.
You have to lay down on the bed and face upwards. Look at the wonderful scene. This is another scene. Yeah? This is summer bedroom. My goodness, how could you sleep when you have see all these? I don't think that persons slept when they were so. They would remain from 8 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the morning, admiring it, trying to discover even the messages of opulence that the Grand Master wanted to show to the people over here. This is the room. Now, this room, they call it the Pope's room, but actually today it's the committee room, no, isn't it? It's the committee room. This is closed to the general public. Here we see a treasure house as well, because the quite in the same fashion of Leonello Spada, and also of here, there are 8 panels that depict the first 100 or so years of the order, from its the first crusade, from its foundation, and then the various vicissitudes that occurred to the knights in their history according to them. The Pope's room is called because there are various paintings of the popes. Today, quite unpoetically, it's called the committee room. Look at the beautiful ceiling here. This is wonderful. One of the wonderful ceilings that we have in this palace. It's close to the Israel public, so here we can say that it's half hidden or hidden treasure of the palace. According to Daniel, this is the most beautiful ceiling of the palace, apart from the paintings, of course. Yes, oh, the palace is the palace. Now we go next to the palace chapel. Now, this I have say something about it, because this is the same story that happened to this. It's a very unfortunate and sad story that happened to this hall that you see here. We'll talk about it later on. But what happened to this chapel is something really sad. because this is the story very similar to what happened at the Grand Council in Sheffield when some high-ups of the governor's retinue had the bright idea of transforming the Patrick's Chapel into a bedroom. Look at the beautiful. When the chapel furnishings, the organ or choir gallery transferred hereby to the main hall. Worst of all, fair duels with the beautiful paintings of Palladini that were painted over and not until recently were they fully restored. Today we may consider them as part of the half-hidden treasures of the palace, as they are not open to the public in general. Even when one can see them, they are indeed a feast for the eye in the most colorful way. They portray the life of the order's patron saint par excellence, that of Saint John the Baptist, by Palladini. This they say is the most beautiful painting of his, is the awarding, the giving of the name Johannes est Nomineus, John has to be his name. As if this chapel's closure or semi-hiding, if you will, was not enough, during World War II it suffered through terrible blasting effects when bombs made a direct hit on the nearby Our Lady of Damascus Church, just a few meters away from the chapel. One can imagine the devastating effect on these frescoes, when no less than 70% of them were detached from the walls. Were it not for the amateurish but timely intervention of a civil servant, who tried to salvare il salvabile, to save what could be saved, by pasting old lotto tickets onto the cracks, this treasure most probably would have been irretrievably lost. So, thanks to the idea of old lotto tickets, which reminds me of a personal story, because yesterday was my birthday, and I am not going to tell you my age. And my father was impossible. He was a lotto player, incorrigible. He was. And for a whole year, he used to play three numbers, if I remember correctly. He used to call them in Italian, 3, 3, 36. 3, 13, and 36. He played it for a whole year. When I was born, in olden times, people were quite different from today. Where I live, my neighbors don't even know me for the last 20 years. But at that time, everybody used to come, Giuseppe, you have won the Terno, it was called, the tree. Yes, and I don't know, he used to collect the lot out, had about 60 of them. I don't know why. But in any case, he said, yes, I won it. And then he couldn't find the lotto. Oh, my gosh, he said, This brat was born and I forgot to take it. And this reminds me, because the civil servant must have been a collector of old lottery tickets. When the restorers came, this is interesting, they found that it was a good application. And thanks to him, otherwise today this treasure, hidden treasure, would be irretrievably lost. So this is, the picture that has been restored, beautiful. This is something wonderful of this, as the carrying the head, not some art. These are drawings of the chapel. Another hidden or half-hidden gem is, or rather was, the beautiful altarpiece, obviously by Palladini. As well, the Madonna with accompanying saints and angels that today adorns the Archiepiscopal Palace of Valletta. It was regaled by the governor to the local bishop when this chapel was adapted to serve as a bedroom. Well, we don't know what will happen even when the chapel will be restored, rehabilitated to its original use. Look at the beautiful wall paintings. These all were whitewashed there. But now they have been. This is very interesting. This is a window called Oculus. It used to turn according to the rays of the sun, open and closed. Because, even in chapels in the countryside, the scene grumbled that there isn't an oculus, an opening, a window. There are some oculus, some windows, that also are placed according to the rays of the setting sun, like بالمفتوح. That's why I write it down, because usually I go off at tangents. But it's very interesting, because the rays of the sun, it came straight on the altar in Bir Miftuh. I used to attend there with the Lard Halwa. And the day, the only day that the straight went straight to the Blessed Sacrament, if it was somewhere the center of the altar, was on the 8th of September, at the birth of Our Lady. It's something quite today, of course, not anymore. But as we were Byzantine, it's not on the 8th, because the Byzantines do it something on the 19th or something of the sort. But in any case, it's that had these windows had their also function as regards. And as we shall see later on, Daniel made a real, I call it, discovery also, because even here there were the rays of the sun according to the seasons. Unfortunately, it was covered. We'll talk about it later on. Look at the beautiful ceiling here. This is also beautiful, something really very nice, which unfortunately we cannot see. Let's hope. Now, we go this is another hidden subject. This is also something which once more, I have to talk about another treasure that has been in hiding for the last 70 years. You showed them already, all right. Up to Lord Plumer, Malta had 25 governors, including the first four commissioners. Plumer, prior to his departure, had ordered portraits of all governors and also commissioners before him, 24 in number. This artistic job was entrusted to Giuseppe Duca, who lived between 1872 and 1948, who studied under Giuseppe Calleja and produced landscapes, religious paintings, and especially portraits of personalities, for which he was much sought after. There are many religious paintings of him, I think, in Rabat, in Santo Baldesca, in Xira, and many other places. He managed to carry out his commission brilliantly and finished the set of 24 portraits in time, just before Plumer's departure. They were hung in the governor's office at this palace when the northwest wing of this palace was heavily damaged during World War II. It was believed for a considerable period that they were lost or destroyed. However, some years back, it has been discovered that not all suffered destruction, and although 6 are missing, which is those of Stobensis, Grenfell, Mansfield, Clark, Grant, Randall, and Methuen, probably destroyed during World War II. The surviving 18 portraits were in storage in the deposits of the palace armory. They have been subsequently studied, identified, and restored, remounted, as many frames were damaged through shattering, probably with the blast of the bomb, given full conservation treatment at Bigi Restoration Center. And just a few days ago, you are the first ones to see them, they have been returned to this palace in the two rooms attached to the dining hall. They are beautiful pastel paintings. Perhaps those of you who are dilettanti, who go to band clubs in Malta, you see many composers. Not all of them are nice, because some of them are really ugly, but Giuseppe Duca also was called to do these composers that fill and enrich our band clubs. If you have time to see one of these band clubs, most probably you'll see drawings of him. He was a very, very good draftsman. And it's strange, because Maltese were not accustomed to do pastel paintings. He was one of those rare cases to do these pastel paintings. And how they manage, because pastel, you know, is very, very fine chalk. It's easily destroyed. It's a miracle how these managed, after being stored for 70 years, nobody knew anything about them. They have been discovered a few years ago. Look at them. Now we can see them. This is Reed. Now, something gets into this. Reed was the only governor who wanted sort of to create a church for all denominations. You know, there were Protestants, Catholics, Orthodox, Jews. He said, no. And where today there is this central bank, over here, St. George's Chapel, that was his idea. What happened was that the Protestants told him, godless churches. The Catholics told him, this is not for God. Everybody started. I said, all right, then. But in it, there were beautiful, the 12 apostles by Giuseppe Calì, which today adorn the San Antoine Chapel. Reed was quite a man ahead of his, today we call it, religionia, they come together, religions. In any case. Ecumenical, yes, ecumenical. He was the first ecumenical radio. Yes. Le Marchand, this is interesting, Le Marchand, you see, Strada Mercante, Merchant Street, it's not because of merchants or because of, seller. The Maltese stated Mercant, because it was named after Le Marchand. And the Maltese quite easily doing phonetically, they say, Mena Messer Mercanti. Storks, I think this had something to do with birds. I don't know anything about him. And Grant, yes, these probably were Simmons. Short-lived.
Who is it?
Simmons.
Yes, Simmons.
Torrance.
Torrance, this is a very cheeky person. I am from Floriana, and he wanted to pull down the bastions between Valletta and Floriana and rename Floriana for him, Città Torrance. But there were so many protests that he stopped his... Fremantle. Unfortunately, this... No, Fremantle. Yeah, no, not the Catholic one, no, Fremantle. No, that's different. O'Farrell. This is a fairy tale story. O'Farrell was the only Catholic governor. When he came to Malta, he tried to, to understand the Maltese, but unfortunately, he couldn't come to grips with the British government did something, and the Maltese were very, very pleased when they saw him, great celebrations, the only Catholic governor. But unfortunately, he said, I cannot understand the Maltese, and he went back before his term ended. Now, this hall, after the we will have time, I hope to talk something about it, because a tragedy occurred in this hall that we are standing now. But this is, of course, one of the hidden treasures. Nobody can see it. This is the pillow on which the knights kneel down to become knighted in the world-renowned today. It's does not exist anymore. It's the order of Saint Michael and Saint George. It was the time of Maitland. It was created exactly in this hall. This is one of the treasures now. It's in the president's palace. This is the winter bedroom over there again. What do we have about the paintings here? Yes, this is quite a different story. This is mythological. See, you can see this is also trompe l'oeil, but their heart is not that joie de vivre, that Nazoni shows. Eh? They are good, they are good design as well. But, yes, current sight. Ah, yes, I am not seeing them running. Yes, the whole, you can see the way Daniel managed to do this picture. The whole wall. Yes, these are the four walls, no? The four walls, Daniel managed to do them at one, and one straight. These, of course, are mythological. One would call them heroes. Let's not forget that we were past the Renaissance, where mythology was quite a part of the daily life of the intelligentsia of the times. Look at the beautiful friezes, that they are just below the ceiling here. The next rooms. These are the next two rooms, and are I think it's, these are the bedrooms as well. Because I read that there are, in this palace there were about 9 bedrooms. Again, you see, the just below the ceilings, these one that they are called a play of trompe l'oeil pictures that adorn the. We come to this room, the balcony in the Sala del Gran Consiglio. Now, the balcony, unfortunately, you can see that all right, beautiful, done by Cali. Cali was master in his drapery. Nobody, there's the coat of arms of La Valette. But this, the inscription over there, it's part of the sad story, one would call it, to what happened to this hall. Yes, what happened to the hall. You just look over there and you see the two phases of the siege. Now, that wall over there, they were absolutely the same. They were destroyed, half of them, so we see half a picture, each one, to invent a sort of gallery. It was a different gallery from this one, and unfortunately we lost. That's the attack on Senglea, and that's the attack also on the post of Castile, in the where we can see La Valette himself directing the activities against the Turk. In any case, that's that. And now that you can see that we call it, we are not sure, but most say that it's from the Gran Carraca. Here we see the picture of the Gran Carraca, which was, of course, scuttled. But then they managed to save this from the back of the Gran Carraca. We do not know who painted the 6 pictures of the creation, but Daniel managed to do these wonderfully close, as you can see them from below, but here to these pictures, Daniel managed to do them absolutely. You can see the creation of Eve from Adam's rib, and the first sin. Yes.
Snake is a woman.
Yes, I know. Better not. A snake is a woman, yes. Yes.
Not
you, <Israel. laughs> No. The snake is a man. And then the Lakachato. And then, of course, the first Noah's Ark over here. Yeah? These that were placed over there. Now, I have to say something, because this is really a sad story. So, we'd better say something about it. Well, may I suggest that we all transport ourselves imaginatively way back to the nostalgic times of La Belle Époque, era, or what is dryly called the 19th century. If we did come here, in this very spot, La Sala del Gran Consiglio, at that time, this is what and how we would have seen this very same hall. Look at it, Probably we would have been impressed by the elegance, by the high brows and high echelons of society and gossipings. But more important than such stuff, if we are, or rather were, of an architectural trait, most probably we would also have been impressed by this elegantly neoclassical saloon with the fluted columns and cornice spatial arrangements that covered the 4 walls from corner to corner and from the floor up to the covered ceiling. I am still imagining the comments of the crowd then. Quote, "Oh, how lucky we are to have the services of such an architectural genius of international fame, George Whitmore." We received the same comments recently. As if that was not enough, at the edge of the hall opposite the throne dais, this is what and how the music gallery transformed. Do you have the photo of the gallery? No, in any case, that was a different, it was transformed into a music gallery. In a slightly curved balcony with neat railing popping out that today has been replaced by the present, they call it a minstrel's gallery. And about this, all right, we have already talked. As I said, we would have been overawed by the superb and sumptuously proud arrangement, and may be grateful to the governor and his entourage for having had the privilege of attending herein. It may be, or rather may have been, that we would not reckon that behind these elegant walls stood a hidden treasure that was, and still is, the crowning glory of this palace, that is, the wonderful murals of Matteo Perez d'Alecchio's Subel pictorial saga of the great sheets. If we knew or came to know of this pitiful official vandalism, naturally we would have been heartbroken and would not hesitate to decry and laud the misdemeanor of the famous architect Whitmore, who at the time was all the rage. One might argue here that this architect, Whitmore, had to obey orders at a time when colonial despotism was rampant, but, in my view, a man of his caliber and social standing should have had the courage to refuse or at least abstain from resorting to and collaborating in this shameful transformation and obliteration of this most important relic of our heroic past. But it seems that his obsessive neoclassicism just took over. In any case, my point here is that, had we been present at that time, we would indeed have dreamt, thought of, and eventually decried the most precious hidden treasure of this palace. There was no Dinlard Halwa then, there was no FAA, and there was no Wirtartna. And to top it all, it's not just because of this national sacrilege. After all, liberal does mistakes, but it's the sheer unbelievable duration of this sad story that one could not but condemn and hate this unpardonable offense. This hiding lasted, you don't believe it, from King Tom's reign, 1813 to 1824, which means Thomas Maitland, up to 1908, almost 100 years. It would be interesting to discover if any protest, English or Maltese, was levelled during the whole century of its covering. And isn't this an irony of fate? It had to be another king, apart from King Tom, but this time it was a real king, King Edward VII, who on his visit to Malta, and naturally to this palace in 1907, was appalled at this disgraceful act. And his younger brother, the Duke of Connaught, told him, and who came with him, and of course remained for 2 whole years on our island, saw to the immediate dismantling of the offensive structures and the subsequent restoration and resuscitation of the until then hidden treasure of the great siege commemorative depictions. Aptly enough, when restoration works were completed over the so-called Minstrel's Gallery, the epithet was composed, you can see it, like not quite close if here, and written just below the coat of arms of La Valette by Calais. I have a suspicion that it was King Edward himself who ordered this epithet, what's written there, that can still be seen to this day, ending with the veiled admonition, Pristinus decor publicae restitutus, which means the original decor or splendor of this hall has been now reinstated, which means that the king now admired and also wanted to see that justice be done to restore this hall to its original splendor. One wonders what could have been at the back of the author's mind or minds then when this mischievous covering was perpetrated. The sheer duration of the hiding of these frescoes and the creation in the very same place over here of the short-lived new order of St. Michael and St. George gives birth to the suspicion that such an act behooved something much more than meets the eye. Is it or was it an attempt of downsizing? Sorry to be, but this is my view. Our identity or our historic past and naturally that of the order of St. John. The crowning or ironically enough, on the occasion of the institution of this new order of chivalry, curiously, or should I say evidently enough, was King Tom, who was appointed the first Grand Master, who on his new investiture, what a cheeky boy he was, he, I would say arrogantly, ordered that this famous Sala del Gran Consiglio should henceforth change its name and forever, observe the word, hipsters the word, forever to be styled as the Hall of St. Michael and St. George. and as verba volans, as scriptum anent, you don't believe in it. This was promulgated in an extraordinary edition for only this purpose of the Malta Government Gazette of 19 December 1818. That was written down, the condemn, the change, just Government Gazette, just to say that this is not the Sala del Gran Consiglio or the Grand Council Hall, but the, from forever should be termed the Hall of St. Michael St. Joe. It so happened at the time that Thomas Maitland was also governor or high commissioner of the Ionian Islands. And what happened, or rather kingdom caused to happen? You don't believe it? Well, his palace at Corfu needed embellishments, and what better hunting ground could be found than this palace? So he simply ordered the treasures from this palace, our palace, are to be removed and installed at this palace at Corfu of the Ionian Islands. These islands did not remain long under Britain's suzerainty, which were ceded to Greece in 1864, and the Maltese naturally expected the repatriation of the treasures that were taken from here. But let me quote, this is a quote, exactly what's written in 1863, the exact words, the Malta Times of 18 June 1863. When Sir Thomas Maitland held the government of the Ionian Islands contemporaneously with that of Malta, he caused to be removed from the palace of the Knights of St. John in Valletta several valuable ancient pictures to decorate his palace at Corfu. These pictures belong by right to Malta. We hope that before the Ionian Islands are given up, the British authorities will take care to secure these valuable works of art and restore them to their proper place at the governor's palace in Valletta. Until this very evening, no one knows if they were ever returned to Malta. In such a case, they are indeed well and truly hidden treasures of the palace. Yes, somewhat. This is, of course, how we can see it today, the whole rather back to its original state. Now, this is another treasure that, thanks to Daniel, we have discovered in this hall.
I read about it.
But you managed also, you transfer here to Bibi. There was, what was it called? The meridian line. Unfortunately, it was discovered, it was covered with this wood platform. It was made of marble. Taken off. But it's interesting. And Daniel also, through reading, discovered, through the ceiling, over there, it's over there, came the rays of the sun, and he's going to show us how they were. You see, the light from there was a hole. So, unfortunately, has been blocked. From there came the rays of the sun. You can see the meridian on the floor that was here. It was made of marble down here. It showed, you see, noon mid-December. It was the winter solstice. You can see it. Then, you see, it's the noon in mid-January. And November, of course, it's twice yearly. Then there was the noon in mid-February and October. There is of the sun. Come here. You remember Frank Ventura, when he made it, that wonderful talk? He would have loved to see this. I don't know if he came this evening. He would have loved to see it. Noon in mid-September. Yes, and March next week it's going. Unfortunately, Lisbon, we would have seen it here. And mid-April and August. Let's not forget, Iran was really quite keen on these astronomical observations. And noon, mid-May and July. And noon, 21st June, summer solstice. That was the end of the room. Yes, and Daniel also managed to find how interesting it is and how precise it. There were these rays of the sun showing the various phases, six, there were seven phases. The last one being, of course, of the summer solstice. As it did something really superb that was here, unfortunately, today. So this is really a lost treasure. And that's, I thank you. I hope you enjoyed it. But in any case, I hope you enjoyed it.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Office of the President of Malta entitled The Hidden Treasures of the Grand Master's Palace. This talk was delivered by Mr. Salvatore Musu.
Finanzi huwa program fuq Campus FM li matulu se jiġu diskussi temi varji li primarjament jirrigwardaw is-servizzi finanzjari mill-enti tal-konsumatur. Il-programm jixandar għall-ewwel darba tnejn fl-10 ta' filgħodu imtenni s-sibt f'nofsinhar. Fuq il-Finanzi huwa mtella bil-kollaborazzjoni tal-Awtorità għas-Servizzi Finanzjari ta' Malta.
Riżmi stampati. L-istorja tal-ġurnalizmu stampat f'Malta. Ix-xandar fuq Campus FM it-tlieta fid-9 ta' filgħodu b'repetizzjoni is-sibt fil-11 ta' filgħodu. Preżentazzjoni u produzzjoni Sergio Grech bis-sem ta' Father Joe Borge.
Inaqdu ma' Professor Gloria Lauri Lucente flimkien miegħi Slim Buħaġar għal-vjaġġ ċinematografiku waqt is-sensiela ċine xena. Analiżi ta' films mill-aktar interessanti. Ċine xena jix-xandar kull nhar ta' tnejn fis-7:30 ta' filgħaxija, ripetizzjoni l-ħamis fid-9:30 ta' filgħodu fuq 103.7 Campus FM.
Ħanniqa ta' melodiji huwa programm ta' mużika sinfonika fejn jinstemaw xogħlijiet ta' kompożituri bħal Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Schubert, Mahler u Stravinsky. Jiena Silvio Camilleri nistedinkom tkunu miegħi fuq Campus FM kull nhar ta' tnejn fit-8 ta' filgħaxija jew il-ħadd fl-10 ta' filgħodu waqt is-sensiela Ħanniqa ta' melodiji.